Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily political podcast. I'm John Connolly and I'm joined today by James Forsyth and Katie Balls. Now, anyone travelling into London this week or watching the news could not help but have seen the Extinction Rebellion protesters who have caused disruption across London by blocking various forms of transport in protest at climate change. James, do you think the protests are having a political impact?
I think they're having an impact in that they're getting noticed, and climate change, which has been kind of down the agenda politically from where it was maybe 10 years ago, has been pushed up the agenda. I think some of it is self-defeating in that, in a way, they're making their case too clear. Because the problem with dealing with climate change in the way that groups like Extinction Rebellion think you should is it essentially requires to abandon the kind of whole way of life. This isn't just like, oh, don't take short-haul flights or try and use public transport rather than your car. They essentially, you cannot have the current economic model that we have in most of the Western world and deal with climate change in the way that they want. And I think when they take on things like the Docklands Light Railway, which is about as green a form of transport as you can get, they make that a little bit too obvious to their cause. I also think this, which is, you can see that the policing of this has been very accommodating to the protesters. One lobby colleague of mine was saying that they turned up to work very early in the morning the other day and found the police almost kind of pushing the barriers out, so closing the streets in advance even of the protesters turning up. But I have to say, working in Westminster, not only do they cut my commute because I can now walk across Parliament Square very quickly, they are, in terms of the police, I suspect it's part of the police's action, they are far less obnoxious than the Brexit protesters on either side. And I mean, that might be part of why the police are behaving the way they are.
Yeah, I think as protests go, it feels like quite a chilled out protest in certain areas. I think gluing yourself to public transport or wall outside a political leader's house doesn't feel like that relaxed, but certainly in Parliament Square, you know, there's folk music, lots of people sitting around. I sometimes feel a little bit this week like a music festival on the last day when everyone's a bit spaced out. But in terms of the protest, I think what's interesting is you've had some polling out and it suggests that actually about a third of people agree with the action, which I think, given that it is causing disruption, is fairly good for them. They've definitely dominated the agenda. I think ultimately, though, you look at what happened yesterday, it does feel self-defeating. You are stopping public transport, which is probably the greenest way to get around London other than walking, and it's not feasible to expect everyone to walk from their house to their office. It would take several hours. I think we're some way off, not just personally speaking. So do I think that they are successful in their aim? I think they've got attention. I think they are self-defeating in the fact that they've actually made it harder for people to use it and more likely to go by car.
And how do you think the two main parties have responded so far?
I mean, it's interesting. So the first Tory response to, the climate strike, where school kids decided to take a day off, it was very dismissive. And I think that there was a kind of view in the Tory party, I haven't got that right. So they're trying to do more. You have Michael Gove on the One Show last night, trying to sound like they're sympathetic to the protesters' aims, pointing out what the government has done while saying, you shouldn't be obstructing the public highway or public transport. I think there is a weird thing on this, though, which is the government actually has quite a good record on environmental issues, and in particularly actually on reducing carbon emissions and all this, but it has done a very bad job of selling it. And I think that is one of the things that you see time and time again with this government. I think it's interesting as well with Jeremy Corbyn, these protesters who glued themselves to the fence outside his house yesterday. And then I think in a sign of a slightly confused nature of this protest, were then very upset when Jeremy Corbyn got understandably upset that some people had glued himself to the fence outside his house. And I think this protest is... this process isn't quite sure what it wants to be, if you see what I mean. Does it want to force the economy to grind to a halt by all means necessary, or does it want to enjoin in some gentle persuasion? And I think you still haven't seen which of those courses of action it has decided to take.
Yeah, and I think James's point on the environment about the fact the government has done things there, it just doesn't promote it very well, is important, because I do think there is a feeling after the snap election particularly, I wrote about at the time, lots of Tories thought the way that they could detoxify slightly would be to go green. And I think there's been interesting polling by Bright Blue, the think tank, which shows that when it comes to young people's concerns, actually the environment is often the top issue for that youngest group of voters. So I think any party, and hence why you're seeing it with Michael Gove talking on the television, doesn't want to go a whole way of saying this is an awful protest, because they know that the topic area is something that almost everyone has some view which is slightly sympathetic. They might not agree with the action, they might not agree with how much you need to reduce carbon emissions by, or if there should be a tax on paper cups. But I think the environment is on everyone's mind as something that any government or main party needs to have a strong policy plan for.
Elsewhere in Westminster, UKIP launched their EU election campaign today. James, how was this different to past sort of campaigns and rallies the party's done?
I think it just shows how peripheral UKIP is becoming. I think if on the morning after the EU referendum you said, oh, we'll still be participating in the European elections in 2019 because we won't have left yet, we all would have thought that would be a bonanza for UKIP. But in the meantime, UKIP have basically gone off in a very unsavoury direction, you know, always flirting with kind of street thugs such as Tommy Robinson. And I think one of the interesting things that you've seen is one of the questions about the European election campaign was, would voters realise this, or would the kind of legacy UKIP brand last? And I think these polls that show Nigel Farage's Brexit Party on kind of 27% of UKIP down in single digits suggests that voters have got that message. And I think it is. Whatever you think of Nigel Farage, it is a reminder that the electorate are going to punish any party that decides to kind of go down the route that UKIP have gone down in recent years in terms of, you know, the supporters they've courted and the things that they've said. And I think it is actually a kind of sign of the relative health of the British body politic that you have seen that UKIP are not going to come anywhere near topping this poll and appear to be in single digits and on the slide.
And Katie, how much of this do you think is down to sort of Nigel Farage's own success promoting his new Brexit party?
Well, I do think that UKIP has name recognition and lots of people are very angry with the Conservative Party, particularly people who voted Leave. So if you didn't have another outlet, if you didn't have a Nigel Farage outfit, UKIP would be getting more votes and more support in the polls. I think that the change in UKIP's direction, further to the right and basically becoming a party which has a strong focus on being anti-Islam, hasn't been picked up by everyone in the country because not everyone follows it and it doesn't follow politics that closely, and also it doesn't get that much coverage. So I think had the Brexit Party not existed, lots of people would be going to UKIP with their protest votes. Now, what Nigel Farage has done is partly because it's Farage, so he can generate publicity, but also, I'd say, partly because of the name of the party. It's something that simple. It's called the Brexit Party. If you're looking at your ballot slip or just reading about something, you get the message that this is a party which is not talking about having another year-long extension, thinking about the single market or having a second referendum. It's clearly aimed at Leave voters, just a ticket on the ballot box and as a protest to the Conservatives' line. So I think it's having a big impact. I think the Brexit Party has been a big blow for UKIP. And you can also see that in terms of the various comments. So Gerard Batten, who's the current UKIP leader, has today, you know, criticised the Brexit Party, saying it's Nigel Farage focused, it's a vehicle for one man. And Farage, meanwhile, has said that UKIP is a lurch towards extremism. I think what's interesting is how Nigel Farage is basically painting his former party as extreme, as hard right. And by doing that, probably draining some support, but also trying to brand the Brexit Party as far more than just a reinvention of the old UKIP. I think when you speak to people who are involved with the Brexit Party, they're very keen that it doesn't become, as Batten has suggested, just a Farage party. They want it to be a place which can get basically anyone who's annoyed with the Conservatives. And they will say that the people they've had approach them to stand as candidates in the EU elections, some of those are people you might have expected in UKIP back when Nigel Farage was in charge, but others are people who are more likely to be Conservative voters, or even people who are Lexiteers, so on the left, who are just very fed up and don't like the idea that their vote hasn't been given attention or listened to.
And we've seen for the first time, James, in what seems to be a main political party, UKIP embrace YouTube stars on the alt-right. Do you think this is a change we're going to see in UK politics in general?
No, because I think the controversialism of these guys, you know, that, you know, I'm going to say the most provocative thing I can imagine to see how it just doesn't work with the general public. And I think it's, you know, David Cameron in that party conference speech after he won that surprise election victory in 2015 said that Twitter is not Britain. If Twitter is not Britain, YouTube is certainly not Britain either. I think there is a kind of basic public decency. And when people talk about raping people and all this, it's not the kind of politics people want.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Katie. And thank you for listening. Now, this is our last Coffee House Shots for the Easter break, but rest assured we'll be back on Tuesday once Parliament comes back for recess. Happy Easter. And if you're looking for something to do over the long bank holiday weekend, then perhaps you should consider taking out a Spectator offer. At the moment, there are 12 issues for £12, plus a £20 John Lewis voucher, simply if you go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.